This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to discuss one of the most potent therapies in the arsenal of integrative medicine. It's chelation therapy. Today we're going to talk to Dr. Dana Cohen. Dr. Cohen is one of my good colleagues here in New York City. She practices in Manhattan. She's a veteran integrative practitioner and trained in internal medicine. So she offers you the best of both worlds. But she embraces integrative modalities, and she is one of New York's foremost practitioners of chelation therapy, a therapy that I've been doing for, well, several decades. It's a therapy which originally was spurned. It was thought to be the hallmark of quackery to administer chelation therapy. But lately, there have been some really exciting developments on the research front that she's going to bring you up to date on. So without further ado, it's a pleasure talking to you again, Dana.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Give us a little background on chelation therapy, because indeed, we'd learned about chelation therapy decades ago as something that really was developed in the 1950s in industrial settings. People were exposed to heavy metal toxicity, and then it came into the medical arena, but only embraced by alternative doctors. So, fill us in on that.
Yeah, so it's the history is really interesting. There's actually some books written about it, and lots of articles written about it. But I guess it was EDTA chelation, which is the chemical that they used to chelate, was actually founded, I think, in the 20s in Germany, and then in the 50s. I believe it was Dr. and you're going to have to help me out with some of the names because I think you may know this even a little bit better than I do. It was Dr. Norman Clark is the one who started thinking about using chelation for heart disease. And so, like you said, it was a treatment for heavy metal toxicity, things like lead and cadmium and calcium, and also it was approved for hypercalcemia.
Can I share something with you? When I was in my medical training way back when in the dark ages, this is in the 1980s, I rotated through one of the inner city hospitals, Bronx Lebanon Hospital. And I did my pediatrics rotation there. And, of course, this was in the South Bronx. You know, the expression, the Bronx is burning. Well, the Bronx was burning. It was if you think poverty is bad now, it was horrendous in the 1980s. Wow. And the conditions were such that there were a lot of kids exposed to lead. The paint was peeling off the walls. The housing was substandard. The kids were crawling around and, you know, licking the floor or sometimes eating paint chips virtually because of poor nutrition. They had a condition called pica, which made them want to seek out minerals, and erroneously they got a lot of exposure to lead. So in my pediatrics rotation, they took us around and they showed us various interesting cases, you know, because this kid had, you know, whatever, you know, some obscure disease. And then I noticed out of the corner of my eye, there was a room where kids were hooked up to IVs. And you know how kids like to bounce up and down on beds? This was a whole room of kids bouncing up and down on beds. And I said, what's going on in there? I said to my professor. He said, that's the chelation room. That's where the kids are getting EDTA chelation for lead toxicity. And then he turned around and he started talking about the case in front of us because he didn't think that was very interesting. But here it was, you know, talk about safety profile. Here were these little kids getting intravenous EDTA for lead toxicity. Of course, it wasn't for cardiovascular disease, but it wasn't until years later that I made the connection. I said, you know, the chelation you're talking about for heart disease is the same chelation that I saw administered to children for lead toxicity.
Yeah, so it's an approved therapy, and it still is an approved therapy for lead toxicity, and it's very safe. So it's been used forever for that. And then in the 50s, this Dr. Clark, you know, at the time had put sort of two and two together and thought, well, you know, autopsied hearts had showed calcification in their arteries, and he was thinking, huh, I wonder if we pull calcium out, could we maybe chelate and improve heart disease? And so that's, I mean, that's how, that's the idea of how they thought that there was a possibility there. There's some new data that that shows that lead and cadmium are really possible modifiable risk factors of heart disease. Very interesting ideas and being put forward. So this idea for chelation therapy started in the 50s. It's had its ups and downs and setbacks on being used by regular doctors. And then, as you said, throughout the years, up until 3-4 years ago, it was very much looked down upon by allopathic doctors, regular doctors, cardiologists, and integrative doctors kept it going all these years, and it became a big part of their practice. And I remember when I started with Dr. Atkins 17 years ago, I remember seeing patients in his IV room getting chelation therapy. He had a lot of patients that, who for some reason were not candidates for, you know, for bypass surgery and had terrible angina. These were, you know, 70-year-old patients, 80-year-old patients who had terrible chest pains, angina, were maxed out on their medications to help that and were not candidates to have surgery. So they ended up finding Dr. Atkins, getting chelation therapy, and it helped them remarkably. And I remember talking to these patients and saying, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah.
What is going on here? And then I remember the other thing, I remember a very early on in my career, a case I worked for Dr. Rothfeld in Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
He had a patient who had gangrene on her foot from diabetes.
Yep.
She had surgery. She had one of those little vacuums that they put underneath. She had everything. She was heading towards getting her leg cut off.
Yep.
And he started chelation therapy on her. And I remember, and she told me she had maybe 20 treatments, and it was completely healed,
mm-hmm.
completely healed, doing nothing else. Those were the two things in my mind that, you know, the light bulb went off.
Can I share my initiation to chelation therapy?
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, I was attending, it was early in my career, and, you know, I was, in those days we were just learning, you know, I was just learning new tools. I was very open because, you know, here it was, I had a practice and I had, you know, herbs and vitamins, but I needed some more hard-hitting therapies for patients who were really sick. And I remember attending a medical conference, and by coincidence, I was sitting next to a nurse, and we got talking. And the nurse said, have you ever heard of chelation therapy? And I said, no, I've never heard of that. And she said, well, it is really great. You really ought to look into chelation therapy. And she extolled its benefits, told me stories like you just shared with me about patients with improved circulation. And then I went back to my office, and I was, you know, within a couple of weeks, I was confronted with a patient who had terrible claudication. You know, for our listening audience, claudication is you can't walk beyond a certain short distance before you experience terrible pain in your legs due to poor circulation. So he had about, he could go about half a block before he had to pull up and maybe lean up against a lamppost or a mailbox and slow down, rub his legs, and then maybe he could trudge on for a few more steps. It was really bad. So I said, well, you know, I hear tell there's this therapy called chelation therapy, and, you know, I knew a little bit about, I'd learned the protocol and how to administer it, and I began giving him chelation therapy. Well, sure enough, within, you know, 6 or 8 treatments, he saw some improvement. We did about 20 treatments, and he had dramatic improvement. He was walking 4 or 5 blocks without having to stop. And we went on to do 40 or 50 treatments. And then, with a collaborator, I think you know him, the late Dr. Vanini, who did a lot of imaging. You know, his thing was imaging, peripheral vascular imaging, had great equipment to look at the blood vessels. He had actually seen that patient before, it turned out, and documented very severe blockage. And he, you know, I called him and I said, you know, I'm going to send that patient back to you because this patient experienced great improvement. I'd like to see objectively what's happening with the circulation. And so he re-imaged him. This is about a year after he begun getting chelation. And he said, he was not a believer in chelation, but he said, Ron, this is amazing. This guy has had dramatic improvement in his circulation. I've never seen anything like it with just ordinary vitamins or diet, you know, the usual things we do. And we ended up presenting a paper at the American College for Advancement of Medicine together, you know, kind of a, we did a duet, you know, I did the clinical part. He did the, showed the pre and post slides. And, you know, I became a believer after that.
I'm curious, was the large vessels improved in flow, or were there new vessels formed? Do you remember?
I think he had a little bit of both. I mean, there's this thing called revascularization, which means that, you know, you see new growth of blood vessels or new areas of circulation. I think just based on flow, he had on a Doppler, he had, which is done, you know, ultrasound evaluation, standard way of evaluating circulation. He had dramatic improvements in flow. You know, there was something was going on. It got our attention, and, you know, both of us became great supporters of chelation therapy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to say, though, that, you know, the way that it's not believed chelation is a, I like to use the term roto-rooter.
Exactly.
I
wanted to touch on that. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a better word. It doesn't clean out the vessels, but it could improve the flow maybe by making the vessels expand a little bit better, or creating new flow.
And in a way, it's a good thing. It's not a roto-rooter, because let's say, you know, we see those like Drano commercials on TV. You know, you just put the Drano in the drain and whoosh, you know, all this stuff gets blown out of your drain. And if EDTA chelation worked that way, the concern would be, oh my goodness, you know, we could send shards of calcium, you know, into your toes, or worse yet, into your brain, because we're dislodging all that calcium that's lining your arteries, and that wouldn't be good, would it?
No, certainly not.
Okay.
So
that being said,
yes. So let's cut to 2012. Well, let's cut to 10 years before that. Finally, there was some interesting ideas and studies going on about chelation therapy, or more about lead and having its possibility in as a risk factor in heart disease. And the NIH, the National Institute of Health, decided to finally do a study on chelation therapy. I think it was really to sort of debunk it and say once and for all, this is not good. Mm-hmm. And to everyone's surprise, the results of that, it's called the TACT trial, trial to assess chelation therapy, TACT, showed really remarkable improvements. Not only that it was safe, but it really had dramatic effects on heart disease. And specifically, so in all patients, it had something like an 18% reduction in overall in the primary endpoint, which was
revascularization, a procedure to open up the arteries.
No, not revascularization. Nope. A recurrence of a secondary event.
Okay.
Right. So it was an 18% reduction in that, and the number needed to treat for that was about 18 people, which is
that's really phenomenal.
Results, yeah. It's unbelievable, and it doesn't sound like much, an 18% reduction, but I'll never forget the cardiologist who did the trial, who's a regular cardiologist. This was even news to him, Dr. Gervasio Lamas. He said if a medication showed this kind of results, it would be the greatest medication in the world.
He said literally we'd all be shipping champagne in Stockholm, you know, with our tuxedos on, ready to receive the Nobel Prize. You know,
exactly.
But because of the bias against this kind of renegade therapy, it was like, well, that's interesting, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, but let me just say one other thing about the TACT 1 trial, the regular TACT trial. What the, and even beyond remarkable was the results that they found in diabetics, patients with type 2 diabetes. So they found a 43% reduction in death, a 41% reduction in their primary endpoint, which was a secondary event. And with the vitamins that, and so there were four arms of the test. One was chelation with a multivitamin and antioxidants. One was chelation with a placebo of a vitamin. One was no chelation and just the vitamins. Mm-hmm. And one was no chelation,
four
no
groups.
Vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
Right, four groups. So what they found in the group that had chelation plus the vitamins was a 51% reduction in their primary endpoint. And the number needed to treat was 5.5 people.
But it wasn't the vitamins, because even without the vitamins, there was a robust response.
Without the vitamins, response, it was 41%. Right.
So it shows that the chelation did most of the heavy lifting on that, for sure.
Right. Exactly.
And you know,
so,
you mentioned number needed to treat, by the way. That's an interesting concept, because many of the therapies that we now adopt and use and we embrace them have a number needed to treat that's much higher than that. So what that means is that, for example, if you treat people with statins, let's say you take 100 people and you treat them with statins for 10 years, middle-aged men with high cholesterol, you might have a number needed to treat of 100, which means that you've unnecessarily treated 99 men, but you saved one man. Well, that's good. That's actually considered pretty darn good, because you know, you put a high premium on saving a life, and even if unnecessary treatment occurs, that's pretty good. But I actually have seen some studies where that's, I think the number is even higher. I think it's like 300.
Yeah. I've even heard higher than that too. I don't want to give you wrong information, but in my mind,
I think it depends on the study.
I'm thinking of I have to look at it again.
Yeah.
But it's high. It's very high. So 5.5.
We're being generous.
Is the number needed. Five people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, these numbers are incredible. And yeah, even with these numbers, there are, skeptics. Mm-hmm. In the regular medicine community. So what is happening now is there is the TACT-2 trial. So it's the trial to assess chelation therapy, part two. And another NIH-funded over $30 million. First of all, this was over $30 million. They gave us another $30 million to – they basically just are trying to repeat these results, but only in diabetics.
Because that was the most interesting segment. They said, okay, so now we've got, you know – where there's smoke, there may be fire. Let's laser-like focus on the diabetics, because maybe we'll see a really important result if we repeat. Because anything that has been shown in science has to be repeated, validated, and confirmed.
Yeah, and so it just started. They just started recruiting. I am a center here in New York that's recruiting patients to be a part of this study, and NYU. There's only two in New York, so it's me and New York University. And you can go, they can, if anybody knows of anybody, so let me tell you what the inclusion criteria is.
Okay.
You need to be over 50. You need to have had a history of a heart attack at over 6 weeks prior to starting this. And you have to be a type 1 diabetic with a hemoglobin A1C of 6.5 or higher at diagnosis. There are some exclusions, like your kidney functions have to be pretty good, no congestive heart failure. There's a couple, but you'll have to talk to whoever. And this is going on all over the country, by the way. So if anybody knows of anybody, it's free to the person.
And that's really key, because let's say a person in a comparable situation said, hey, gee, you know, I hear chelation is really great. I'd like to get the number of treatments that seem to work for diabetes, which is in this study, it was 40, right? So, you know, do the math. I mean, the treatments are at least $100 per, and often more. And then there's the attended doctor's visits and blood tests. And we're talking, you know, de minimis $5,000 and maybe, you know, up to $10,000. And you can get this treatment now free as part of a study.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But keep in mind, you may be, you know, so there are still the four arms of the study. It's still the same thing. So it's blinded. So neither the doctor knows nor the patient knows whether or not they're getting a placebo or the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And so also just to know, if somebody's interested, it is It's 40 treatments given over the course of a year. The treatments, you go to the office wherever you're getting the chelation. It's about 3 hours long. So my office happens to have lovely, comfortable chairs. Mm-hmm. You sit there for 3 hours. There's other people possibly in the room with you. So it is a little bit of a social event.
Mm-hmm. Always turns out that way.
And so 3 hours once a week. For 40 weeks over the course of a year. So if you have to miss a few weeks here and there, that's accounted for. Mm-hmm. And it's a great opportunity if anybody knows of anybody who might be eligible to possibly be a part of this study.
Yeah, let's get the word out.
Really important study. Yeah.
And let's get the word out among also, you know, interested holistic aficionados, you know, who may know people, you know, you could be case finders for this, but also some of the health professionals who listen to this program. Maybe, you know, you're a nutritionally oriented chiropractor, or maybe you're a naturopathic physician, or maybe you're a health coach, and one of your patients, or perhaps one of your family members is in this predicament. You can make a referral, and you can advance the cause of science, and you can really help one of your clients or one of your relatives achieve what I think would be stupendous benefits, you know, as part of the study. So it's a great opportunity. Yeah. And I congratulate you, Dana, for taking on this study because, you know, being a researcher is tough. It involves, you know, you have to adhere to procedures. You have to fill out a lot of paperwork. It's a great thing you're doing, being part of this.
I'm actually loving being a part of it. I have not done much research in my career, and you're absolutely right. It is a little bit of a paperwork nightmare, but I so believe in this cause, and I so believe what Dr. Lamas is doing, and I think this should be part of mainstream medicine and everything that we're learning every day about lead and cadmium as well. Is really interesting. You know, lead and cadmium are ranked as chemicals of concern by the Agency for Toxic Substances. And the only way we can get them out, I just read this too, that they accumulate in our bones, by the way. And the half-life of lead in our bones is 30 years.
And then as you age, it comes out. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, people say, oh my goodness, I'm not like chewing on paint chips. Where am I getting it? And I ask them, where were you in 1966? Because a lot of people were alive. That was the year in which they banned leaded gasoline. So up until then, there was plenty of lead in the atmosphere and along roadways and, deposited on food. Even nutritional supplements had lead.
And it's still in our soil.
Yeah.
I had a really interesting patient who was on a rampage to figure out where lead came in. She was younger, too, how she got lead. She realized she had moved into a new house. Mm. She had her radiators were imported from China.
And
they were covered in lead paint.
This
was not that long ago. This was probably about 6 years ago.
Boy. Yep. All right, let's pause on that note. And just can you give us quickly before we pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, give us the 401 on where patients should apply for this study.
So you can call my office, 212-787-1877. My website is www.drdanacohen.com. Or you can look at the TACT2 website, which is www.tact2.org.
Okay. More on the subject of chelation therapy for cardiovascular disease with today's guest, Dr. Dana Cohen. We'll talk more about the TACT study when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.